Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday and Sunday right here on KTEP. And joining us today is Sandra Brown. Sandra is the author of the recent book, Mean Streak. She is also the author of 64 New York Times bestsellers. There are more than 80 million copies of her books in print worldwide. Her last several hardcover releases were instant New York Times bestsellers. In 2008, she was named Thriller Master, the top award given by the International Thriller. And again, as I mentioned, her latest thriller is Mean Streak, and Sandra is a fellow Texan. She is a graduate, alum of TCU. She's a friendly lady, friendly face, and great books that scare the heck out of you and leave you in suspense. And she's here to talk about not her mean streak, but the mean streak, the book. Sandra, thank you very much for being with us.
By all means, Louis. Thank you for having me.
Now, let's start a little bit about, first of all, I mentioned you went to TCU and you're a fellow Texan, but a lot of people may not be aware that before you started writing, you also had a career in television at Channel 8.
Well, it was a short-lived career, but I did work at Channel 8 in Dallas, and before that, a television station in Tyler. My husband and I both worked in commercial TV. We both enjoyed it very much. He was a lot better at it than I. And my last job for Channel 8 was on a nationally syndicated program called PM Magazine.
I remember that.
And, I was one of the on-air contributors. And it sometimes happens in broadcasting. The powers that be came through one day and said, we want all fresh faces. And I was one of those whose face was no longer that fresh, I guess. And so I was let go. And the job had been part-time for me. The family wasn't relying on me for livelihood, but it did take away kind of my creative outlet, and so I was left at home with two children, and I thought, what can I do now? And my husband really challenged me to do something I'd always said I wanted to do, but I never had, and that was to write fiction. And he said, it seems to me that you have time and opportunity now, which you have not had previously, and sort of put it in the form of a dare and took him up on it, and it changed my life.
You were a writer, obviously. You have been a writer, and working in television news, you have to write. And that's a big difference from doing television news and television features, like for PM Magazine, mm-hmm. to writing thriller novel. Was it hard for you to make that switch when your husband kind of threw down the gauntlet?
Well, not really, because I was an avid reader, and I think you have to be a reader before you're a writer. And I read, books constantly, always have a book, usually a book and a spare, just in case I finish the one that I'm reading, I've got another to begin. And my dad was a writer. He was a newspaper editorial writer. So I think, observed from him the discipline that writing requires, because every day that he went to work, he had to write an editorial. And so it might be, a few hundred words. Well, a novel is several thousand, but for me, it was a natural progression, because I could construct sentences, I could construct paragraphs, but now I was telling a longer story. So I think the talent for writing or the efficiency of writing was kind of bred in me. I just had to learn how to tell a story that wasn't factual. I wanted to write fiction.
How difficult was it for you to adjust from writing for television and then writing the several thousand words instead of mm-hmm. several hundred?
Well, I was a daydreamer, card-carrying daydreamer my whole life. And I would, even before I started writing them down, I'd kind of have these stories going on in my head, or scenarios, or what if this happened, what if that happened. And so I think just the writing is so much of fantasizing and daydreaming and thinking up stuff. And so it was almost, and still to this day, it's harder for me actually to write like an article because then you have to, you know, you have to stick to the facts. If you're writing fiction, your mind can go anywhere, you know, it wants to take you. And so I find it much more fun to make believe.
Tell us about your first novel and how it developed.
Well, I was such a novice at this. I had no idea how one hung out their shingle and declared themselves to be a novelist. But as I mentioned, my husband also worked at Channel 8, and at that time he had a morning talk show, and he had interviewed writers all the time, all the authors coming through on book tour. And there was a local woman who had published several by this time, and he said, you know, she was on this show, so she sort of owes me a favor, so why don't you contact her and just ask her, how does one get started? And long story and other things, but she invited me to attend a writer's conference with her in Houston, and I said, oh, I don't belong there, I'm not a real writer, and put up all these excuses, and she just insisted that I go, and she said, there'll be editors there, there'll be agents there. Well, all of these people sounded so scary, you know, editors and agents, I'm not ready for that. But I did go, and while there, I met a woman who owns a bookstore, an independent bookstore in Texas, in Lufkin. And she said, I know every editor, and I know what they're looking for, and I've read everything there's ever been written because I'm a school librarian. So when you get a manuscript you like, you send it to me, and I'll tell you whether or not you have the knack. And so I took her up on that offer, and she liked the manuscript so well that she called an editor and told her to watch for it and told me to put it in the mail that day, and I did, and the editor bought my first book. So I had practiced, I had gotten rejections from other submissions, but that was how the first one came about being sold.
I guess a lot of people will ask, singers, artists, like, is there somebody that you patterned your work after or you looked after? And I know they asked that of us in journalism school. If there was a certain newscaster that to pattern yourself after them and then develop your own style. So is there a certain author that
well,
you preferred?
Well, actually several. There was a female writer who actually wrote under a male pseudonym, Taylor Caldwell. And I just loved her books. I loved the way she structured her stories. So her book really made me want to write, you know, a family. Playwright Tennessee Williams just had, you know, he could cram so much into just a few words. And so I read all of his plays, and how does he get so much family angst, you know, just out of one scene is just so rife, you know, with good stuff. And I love that kind of Southern decadence that he portrayed so well. There were many, many others. There was an English author who wrote under the name Evelyn Anthony, and she was writing romantic suspense before it had even become a genre. She was combining elements of espionage novels and mystery novels, suspense novels, but she also had a strong element of romance and built a love story into all of her books. And so I read those over and over and over again because that's what I liked. And so it was just kind of a melding of every individual I'd ever read, you know, I think had some part in developing me as a writer. But then I like to think that the Sandra Brown voice is a very distinctive voice because I also brought to it my own feelings. I don't think you can write anything without part of your personality and the things that you hold dear, the things that you dislike intensely. I think all of that comes out in the book.
Now, as you mentioned, the genre of romance, thrillers, mysteries is something that's recent. And another thing that, you know, sometimes people get put in a niche just like before, it was just rock and roll music, but now you have rap, you have metal, you have everything. And so there are several sub-niches. As far as romances, it used to be that, you know, it was for women and women only. And now with the thrillers like you write, men are reading these kind of books as well.
Well, I think the thriller genre of espionage, like the John le Carré and Frederick Forsyth and some of those other authors who really, you know, gave us such fabulous books and continue to, even though they, you know, they've been around for a long time and Ken Follett, all of these people, the people think in terms of masculine books and masculine stories because they involve weaponry and they involve, you know, adventure and the freedom to pursue, you know, the bad guy that typically hasn't belonged to the female. Well, all of that's changed in our society as well as in literature, and so fiction is beginning to reflect that change. And I think that I don't think of myself as having abandoned what I learned or what I did when I was writing strictly for the romance market, but I brought those elements into what I'm doing now. And I don't think that they're mutually exclusive. They shouldn't be. Because if you're writing a love story but you're also running for your life, then that suspense heightens the stakes for the relationship. Conversely, the relationship heightens the stakes of the suspense. It makes it more intense and creates more tension. And that's what every story should do, is constantly be creating tension within the reader. Are they going to make it? Are they going to make it? Are they going to survive? And so I think it one really enhances the other. So I said romantic suspense, it's not that new a genre, but it's one that's been given a very particular spot in the whole spectrum of fiction writing, more so than it has in, say, even like 10 or 12 or 15 years ago. It's kind of come into its own, and I think people are recognizing, you know, you could, and Ken Follett, have to give him credit. One of my favorite books ever was The Eye of the Needle. And it was a, you know, it had a lot of sexual tension between the two main characters. And I read that book, I thought, gosh, this is great, because it just helped create more and more tension. And so I've studied that book, too, in his writing, how he did that. And I met him a few years ago, and I shook his hand, and I said, I feel like you really brought women fiction writers, you did us a great favor by writing Eye of the Needle.
You mentioned about you know, tension and the relationship is going to happen and what's going to happen, and you do that very well in your latest novel, Mean Streak. And you wonder about what's happening between Emery and Jeff and the mysterious man in the cabin. And I'm just going to leave it there. I don't want to give it away as far as for the reader, so the reader can go out and get the book. But tell us a little bit about this book and how it all started.
Well, I was working on something else entirely, and I had a different story. I was several hundred pages into it, and I just wasn't liking it. I wasn't having any fun. And but you know, I owed my publisher a book this year, so I was kind of sticking with it and hammering it out. And then one night I was just sitting at home and had the TV on, but I was kind of in that, you know, twilight zone. And all of a sudden I just saw this scene unfold. And it was my lead character, Emery Charbonneau, you know, running through the woods, it's cold, and something happens. And the next thing she knows, she wakes up and she's in a cabin, isolated, alone, with this very mysterious, tall, dark, handsome stranger who won't tell her anything about himself or even how she got to be there. And all of a sudden, I just got this, you know, these little bubbles of excitement because it was like, ooh, who is he? Who is she? What's the situation? What happened? Why won't he tell her anything? And so I figured I couldn't wait to find out, so therefore the reader wouldn't be able to wait to find out. And so I just put the other book aside for a few days, and I just started, you know, hacking it out, down these ideas that were coming so hard and fast. And before I knew it, I was five chapters in, and so I didn't even tell my editor that I had changed anything. I thought, I'm going to get a little further and see what happens. And the story just started unfolding, and I thought, no, this is the story I need to be writing. So a few weeks into it, I got the catalog copy that they were going to send out to all the book accounts describing the book. And, of course, it was the other story. And so I called her and I said, there is one tiny thing. This is not the book I'm writing any longer. And she said, well, tell me about. And I said, why don't I just write the catalog copy for the book that I'm writing, and it will kind of synopsize it for you. And she called me back. She said, I love it. I love it. Go with it. So that's how Mean Street came about. And it really just started with that one scene with really the prologue of Emery running alone in a remote area, and something happens, and neither I nor the reader now will know, you know, exactly what happened until later on in the book. But that's how it came about.
The reader might wonder, okay, so Sandra gets an idea and she writes that prologue. Then how do you develop the rest of the story? Is it like one day maybe you'll write two chapters, another day you might write maybe a page?
Well, after I kind of figured out that this was the book, things started unfolding and characters walked in. I know it sounds crazy, but characters walked into the scene, you know, Jeff and his illicit lover, and then I had the two policemen, and walk into scenes and start talking, and I write down what they say, but obviously I have to kind of know where I'm going to go with this. So once I had established what I call the terrible trouble, then I had to take a day or two and just say, okay, where am I going with this? What happens from here? And some surprises, some of the reversals I build in. Because as a fiction writer, it's my responsibility to keep surprising, the reader. And so I build in a few surprises. But then others, I don't see coming myself. And that's what makes it so much fun, is because sometimes the best surprises are the ones that I didn't invent. They just happened. And then I think, oh, that's great, you know, and so I go with it, because I figure if I'm surprised, if I'm shocked, if I'm being entertained, then the reader will too. So I do know the terrible trouble. I do know ultimately what's going to happen. So I know where I'm going. I don't always know how I'm going to get there. And so the fun of coming to work every day is to wait and see what happens. Often that's the case.
Now, I know when I was in television news, one of my hardest things was starting the story. That first sentence was always so difficult. John Irving, he writes about how that first sentence is so important. Because
it is important. I rewrite it probably two or three dozen times. It's very important. And sometimes I will actually be several chapters into the book before I go back and write the prologue, if there is a prologue at all. I like to start with a prologue, because I've read one time an article about fiction writing. It said start with the snake, and because your reader wants to know right away what kind of trouble your protagonist is going to be in. So start with the snake. And that, you know, grabs the reader's attention, and then you can kind of go in and fill in the blanks slowly. And with the opening scene, you should establish questions that aren't answered until the end of the book. So the first question you ask is the last question that you should answer. And that maintains the suspense. It keeps the suspense going. You just plant a question in the reader's mind in the very first few pages, and you don't reveal the answer to that until the very last few pages. That's what keeps the reader turning. because even though it's a subconscious thing, all along they're wondering, you know, what happened to Emery and who did it? In those first few pages. So that's what you don't want them to know the answer until they get to the end of the book. But the first sentence is so vital. It should establish several things, but in a thriller, it should establish that whatever just happened is bad news for whoever it happened to.
And the ending is just as important, as you just mentioned. And sometimes you don't really know, the reader doesn't know how it's going to end. So I would imagine you as a writer sometimes don't know how to end or have several endings. And in the book,
I know what the crisis is going to be and how that's going to play out. I know what's going to happen to the main characters and how they all, you know, fit together. It all comes to a head. So I know that part, but I have done two or three drafts sometimes before I write the last scene, trying to figure out, okay, what would be the logical way in which this would end? And sometimes it's hard, once you've had that climactic scene, to come back in behind it and kind of let your reader know that, okay, this is what happens as a consequence of that. So that's very critical, too. And I remember, I can't remember which book it was, but I remember just a few years ago, could not figure out a way to end it. And then the ending finally occurred to me. I didn't want it to be too pat. I didn't want it to be, I thought it would be illogical just to make it, you know, so tied up in a nice little bow. So I left it a little bit open-ended.
In the book Loving Anthony by Lisa Genova, one of the characters there is writing a book also, and the editor tells her, she asks, when do I know when I'm finished? And she said, you'll know. You'll know when you're finished. And so I guess that's something that you, after many years of writing, you kind of get the hang of it, just like in television news when we were doing that.
Well, I like to think that I leave my reader very satisfied.
You do?
I get so annoyed. And I read a book recently that just stopped. It made me so mad because up to that point it had been very, very, very good. And then I got to the end and I went, well, I must be missing pages because it just ended. And I thought, what? And so I try to leave my reader with feeling satisfied that things turned out the way they should have. And, of course, because they want the HEA, the happily ever after ending, because these are love stories. So they want to know that there's at least a very strong possibility that these people are going to spend the rest of their lives together. So that's kind of expected in the genre and from my readers, certainly. It can't always be just so pat, and yet at the same time, I would never cheat my reader what I consider to be a satisfying ending.
Does the way you write now, do you have to change at all for like today's generation? Because some of them, they'll say, I'll just wait for the movie, or they don't read. You captivate your audience with your books, I think.
Well, thank you. That, books are in competition, very stiff competition, with video games and Netflix and everything else. And we kind of live in a time where if it's longer than 2.5 minutes, it doesn't count. YouTube videos. it's like instant gratification. However, readers. Are readers, and there are always going to be readers. And I'm one, you're one, where you really want to delve into that story. And I think it's vital that we as fiction writers appeal to new generations of readers, that we have to, there are certain things I would love to do that I won't because I just don't feel like they'll be commercial now. And it's too bad, because I would love to do a particular project, but I'm thinking, you know, I just don't know that the market is there for that kind of project anymore. And I have, my writing has sort of evolved. If you recall in Mean Streak, a lot of the information about the characters' backgrounds and everything I impart through dialogue. Readers no longer want to open a book and see long paragraphs of exposition without any dialogue. They want it snappy, they want it quick, and for instance, the scene with the FBI agent and the mystery man's sister, I imparted a whole lot of background information about him and what he's about without giving away any secrets, but at the same time you get a sense of him just from what they're saying about him, which is much more entertaining to the reader. The reader is there in the scene listening to this conversation between two people rather than plowing through paragraphs and paragraphs of just narrative.
Okay. Well, Sandra, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Fun, Louie. Thank you.
You're welcome. And again, you have a Facebook page, correct, and an author's page as well?
Oh, yes. Yep. It's Sandra Brown Author on Facebook. I would appreciate everyone following that. And that's where you find out a lot about, you know, reviews as well as what's going on in my life other than writing. And I have a website, sandrabrown.com or sandrabrown.net. And I'm on Twitter, so everyone can follow me on any of those venues.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We've been visiting with Sandra Brown. She is the best-selling author of the recent book, Mean Streak, and you can find out more about it by going to her Facebook page, to her author page, or just going to one of the various booksellers that you frequent to patronize and find out more about this exciting book. She's had more than 60 bestsellers. Thank you very much again, Sandra, for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Louie.
The KTEP Summer Book Club has been well received by you, the listener, and this, along with other author conversations, are in the Perspectives Archives on KTEP.org. Follow us on Facebook in order to keep up with the latest chats Louie has with a wide range of writers, novelists, and more. And if you have a suggestion for an author for Louie to talk with, use the Contact Us button on our website or shoot Louie a message on Facebook. Thanks so much for listening to Perspectives.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.